What if the very thing you're doing to escape depression is precisely what keeps you trapped in it? Over 264 million people worldwide wrestle with depression, and most approach it the same way. They think harder, analyze deeper, and search desperately for answers. Yet this mental effort, the rumination, the self-criticism, the endless attempts to think our way out of darkness, actually tightens the grip of depression. There's a different path, one that feels almost counterintuitive. Instead of fighting our thoughts and feelings, we learn to change our relationship with them. This approach, backed by neuroscience and proven to cut relapse rates in half, offers something revolutionary. Not a cure through force, but freedom through awareness. Depression isn't just prolonged sadness. It's an intricate web where feelings, thoughts, physical sensations, and behaviors feed each other in a self-perpetuating cycle. Consider Alice, who managed well after her divorce until a car accident triggered something deeper. Each crisis reactivated the same pattern, like a neural pathway worn smooth by repeated travel. Or Jim, who, despite having everything most men could ask for, family, security, comfort, sits paralyzed in his car each morning, unable to face the day. Depression creates connections in the brain between mild sadness and catastrophic thinking. A minor disappointment becomes a doorway to worthlessness. Someone doesn't wave back, and suddenly we're convinced nobody cares, never mind that they might simply not have seen us. These aren't just thoughts. They arrive with physical signatures. Our bodies contract, muscles tense, as if facing actual threats. 80% of people with depression visit doctors complaining of unexplained aches and pains, never mentioning the emotional storm beneath. The behavioral patterns complete the trap. Alice abandoned pleasurable activities to conserve energy for important responsibilities, unknowingly eliminating the very activities that could reverse her decline. Jim withdrew from friends while his rest periods became opportunities for his mind to spiral into self-attack. Our emotions evolved as elegant messengers. Fear signals danger. Sadness responds to loss. In nature, these reactions are brief. Watch a gazelle who's just escaped a lion. Within minutes, it's calmly grazing again. So why does depression persist? Because we have emotional reactions to our emotions. Carol lies in bed, a little miserable, and immediately launches an investigation. Why do I feel this way? What's wrong with me? This is rumination, like trying to clean spilled milk with water. Here's the cruel paradox. The analytical thinking that brilliantly solves external problems becomes poison when turned inward. When we treat our internal experiences like external threats, our world contracts. Our moods function as internal contexts for memory, automatically retrieving thoughts from times we felt the same way. If childhood unhappiness involved feelings of inadequacy, even slight adult sadness reactivates these ancient patterns. We feel deficient without recognizing we're experiencing memories, not reality. Mindfulness offers not a better way of thinking, but a different way of knowing. Awareness that emerges through paying attention on purpose, in the present moment, without judgment. We all possess this capacity, though most of us have left it untended. A travel writer invited to a Japanese dinner believed he was eating rare, potentially deadly blowfish. He savored every bite with exquisite attention, the texture, the subtle flavors, the way it felt in his mouth. Later, he learned it was common fish. The lesson, how extraordinary the ordinary becomes when we truly pay attention. Most of us believe we already pay attention, but typically we use tunnel vision, focused narrowly on problems to be solved. Mindfulness means suspending judgment, setting aside future goals, taking in the present as it is. It means recognizing thoughts as passing mental events rather than reality itself, experiencing life through our bodies and senses rather than through unexamined habitual reactions. Consider eating one raisin mindfully, looking closely at its wrinkles and color, feeling its texture, smelling it, placing it in your mouth without chewing, exploring it with your tongue, then slowly chewing while noticing waves of taste and changing texture. This deliberate slowness reveals how much we typically miss through automatic behavior. When locked in problem-solving mode, our mind screens out everything not immediately relevant. We mortgage our present moments for future promises, washing dishes while planning the next activity, finishing our coffee without tasting a single sip. The breath serves as a gateway to the present moment, always available and transforming experience by redirecting attention. Our minds leap chaotically like monkeys through trees. Research reveals a paradox. Suppressing unwanted thoughts makes them persist. Instead of force, we need gentle intention, allowing the mind to settle naturally like mud in still water. Vince discovered that focusing on breath had a remarkably calming effect. Practicing daily at lunchtime, his boss and colleagues commented on how much happier he seemed. Yet Katrina struggled, finding herself thinking of 1,001 things. This recognition marks the beginning of meditative awareness. Each time the mind wanders, we have an opportunity to notice when we've slipped from being mode into doing mode. Unhappiness can be broken by bringing mindful awareness to the body. In doing mode, we see the body through thinking and labeling. In being mode, we open to direct sensing. When Nancy thought about her hands, her mind filled with judgments about aging. When directly sensing them, she noticed tingling, warmth, and coolness without analysis. The body scan, a lying down meditation, guiding awareness systematically through the body, uses breath to carry attention into each region. Rather than trying to achieve relaxation, the practice invites direct experiential sensing. Though relaxation isn't the goal, deep calm often emerges naturally. Jan described feeling as if she were floating and experiencing relief from mental clutter. However, when she later tried to recapture this pleasant state, it eluded her. When disconnected from our emotions, they control us without awareness. This experiential avoidance, tuning out uncomfortable feelings, becomes habitual but ultimately fails. Like turning up the radio to drown out concerning engine noises, it may provide temporary relief but doesn't prevent breakdown. Maria had developed a habit of suppressing difficult emotions, leaving her disconnected and exhausted. During meditation, she discovered a subtle unpleasant sensation below her ribcage when thinking of her adult children. Days later, when sadness arose after their visit, instead of pushing it away, she sat on her son's bed and tuned into her bodily sensations. For the first time, she allowed herself to cry without trying to control it. After a few minutes, the crying naturally subsided and she felt peaceful stillness. Our thoughts powerfully shape emotions, yet they aren't necessarily accurate. A child waiting for their father after school feels distress when he doesn't appear, only to realize they mixed up the days. Our interpretations, not facts themselves, drive our emotional responses. Most of what shapes our feelings operates as running commentary we barely notice. Mindfulness offers a different relationship with thoughts, seeing them simply as mental constructions rather than facts, neither mine nor me. When we perceive I'm always going to feel this way as just a thought, it loses its power. Our sense of hearing provides a helpful model. We don't consider sounds as part of ourselves, we recognize them as external events. Similarly, we can relate to thoughts as discrete events in awareness, coming and going like sounds. Meditation often reveals our critical commentary. You've lost focus again, you're messing up. Labeling these patterns, critical mind or judging mind, helps us see them as visitors rather than truth. For those who've experienced depression, recognizing negative thoughts as features of depression's landscape rather than reliable truths is liberating. In group settings, participants often discover others had identical thoughts, realizing, "This is depression, it's not me." The 3-minute breathing space condenses mindfulness into a quick shift from doing mode to being mode. This hourglass-shaped practice, wide at beginning and end, narrow in the middle, cuts through autopilot and creates space for skillful responses. When Kate's grumpy teenage son snapped at her, she noticed a feeling of contraction in my chest, rising tension and irritation. Instead of reacting with anger, a brief pause allowed her to respond differently. "I've missed you." Her son smiled, a smile I had not seen in ages. The practice involves gently noting what captured our attention, thinking, planning, worrying, and returning to the breath without harsh judgment. After experiencing calm, we often expect the same results every time. Paula felt wonderful during practice, but became irritated when restlessness arose, unconsciously setting a goal of feeling good. Vince learned to let thoughts drift. "If I can bring myself back even a little, the thoughts don't bother me so much." Beginning again isn't an error. It is the heart of the practice. Mind wandering reveals how the mind continually brings up unfinished business. With practice, we learn to notice when attention strays, smile in recognition, and gently return to bodily sensations. Most of us live ruled by our to-do lists, trapped in a myopic narrowing that damages our emotional health. Yet even small shifts toward mindful being mode can profoundly enrich our lives. Peggy worked in a demanding advisory job where she woke each morning with dread. After mindfulness training, she brought attention to her body sensations and distinguished between physical sensations, unpleasant feelings, negative thoughts, and specific worries. When time allowed, she visualized difficult feelings as a rock on a beach, surrounding them with waves of breath, warmth, and compassion. This didn't make feelings disappear, but they became less all-consuming. Rather than interpreting fear as personal deficiency, she saw these feelings as messages to be gentle with herself. David struggled at work despite transforming his mornings through mindfulness. His breakthrough came when investigating his distractions. He discovered he was suffering from comparing his current state with an idealized mindful state. This insight brought a liberating thought: I do not need to be happy. Paradoxically, releasing this expectation brought genuine happiness and lightness. Depression thrives in the gap between how things are and how we think they should be. Mindfulness offers something more valuable than making difficult feelings disappear: the freedom to experience them without being destroyed by them.